This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 8th of January 2016 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. Now, today is our first film review of 2016, and to celebrate our return, Karen Krzanovich joins me in studio. Together, we're going to the ballet with Bolshoi Babylon, a behind-the-scenes documentary about Moscow's legendary ballet company. We'll discuss Tarantino's latest blood-fueled adventure, The Hateful Eight, and we'll end with a moral dilemma in the Danish film, A War. That's all to come right here on the Monocle Arts Review. Stick around. Welcome to the show, Karen, and a very happy new year to you.
Thank you.
We're going to begin in Russia for a look at the turbulent backstage action at the Bolshoi Ballet. Now, back in 2013, news headlines worldwide were made when the company's artistic director, Sergei Filin, was the victim of an acid attack. Now, this documentary, Bolshoi Babylon, hopes to shed some light on the toxic story to a certain extent. Maybe to start off, Karen, you can set up for us kind of what the Bolshoi Ballet represents and why it is so special that they got this unique access at this moment in time.
Well, this film was made after they had made the two filmmakers, Nick Reed and Mark Franchetti, had made a documentary about serial killers at an isolated prison in the Urals. And so they're kind of used to the secrecy and the difficulties within Russia. So now this is an HBO funded film, and they, well, one of the opening quotes of this film, which is a documentary, although because of the nature of the story, you'd think it's more of a drama. they're saying that the Bolshoi Ballet is a very, very political kind of thing. It's there's this wonderful statement that says, the Bolshoi's problems are symbolic of the government's deepening institutional instability, and I'm quoting. And so we're already thinking, okay, we're looking at a mirror of the country. Now, the things that we learn about the Bolshoi Ballet on the way of learning about this horrific attack is that there are 3,000 people working in this building, and it's a hive of competitive personalities, of people thrusting and parrying and trying to further their careers, which I think, you know, as some other critics have pointed out, you know, theater's like that too, and film is like that too, so it's not such a surprise.
Well, let's have a little listen to a clip from Bolshoi Babylon.
The artistic director of Sergei Filin is being treated in a Moscow hospital for severe burns after a masked man threw acid in his face.
That was a clip of the documentary Bolshoi Babylon. Now, it really is a bit of a black swan tale, but not fiction, but reality.
No.
Isn't it? I mean, I think what I was struck by and what makes it so fascinating and compelling is that contradiction of this beautiful world of the ballet, which is so magnificently shot and in slow motion, and the ambition and the politics. And so there is this kind of edge of your seat sort of fascination of the warpness of it, is there not?
No, absolutely. And it's I'm always thinking, well, why did he get acid? Where did, you know, what it, that's the part I really wanted to hear about, because I'm thinking it was such a horrific attack. If you remember in the news, it was just shocking to hear that there's a documentary that's going to tell us about it. You're thinking, wow. But it doesn't actually focus too much on that. You kind of get you go down a side alley where you start learning about what the ballerinas and dancers have to go through. And they're saying, you know, this is for youth, you know, you've to burn your youth out. And there's, you know, the pictures of the gnarled feet and the, you know, and it's fascinating. And really, when I talk to you about it now, I just think that I can smell the rosin and smell the, you know, the ballet shoes. Oh, that sounds disgusting, but it sounds magical to me right now.
It one of the reasons they did get access, I gather, was because they said this is going to be a documentary for the feature film. It's not going to be a television sort of documentary. Mm-hmm. And I think for that, it really does sit on a big screen. Can you talk maybe just a little bit about that cinematic look at the In the Wings of the Ballet and the Sounds?
Well, it is beautifully shot, I have to say. You get a very lyrical sense of the movement off the stage, you know, in the wings, waiting in the wings, and also the hard work that goes in at the rehearsals, and also the meetings that go on. So you really get to see the whole animal, as it were. And when they magically appear on the stage, I mean, it's lit, and it really is spectacular.
I could smell the resin and see the dust in the stage lights.
It's really, really beautiful. It's like looking at a Degas, a living Degas. It's just amazing.
Well, for ballet obsessive lovers like me, I do think it is a must on all fronts. After its premiere at the Toronto International Film Festival last fall, Bolshoi Babylon opened to audiences in the USA and Japan just before Christmas, and it's now on British screens as of today. Let's move on to the latest offering from Quentin Tarantino, The Hateful Eight, which follows a collection of nefarious characters on the move through America after the Civil War. They end up taking shelter in the same cabin, where, of course, trouble ensues. Karen, would you describe this vintage Tarantino?
Many people are saying it's his best. Personally, I didn't get on with it at all. I think that it looks amazing. I mean, Robert Richardson, his cinematographer, did a wonderful job considering that it's shot in Ultra Panavision 70, which is a very archaic system of filming. Primarily, you're supposed to be filming huge vistas. Mm. Instead, Tarantino takes it after about 45 minutes to an hour, it's 2 hours and 47 long, into probably the largest cabin you've ever seen. But the depth of field is such that you are able to watch a whole chessboard, all the characters and all the drama unfold.
Before we go into how it unfolds, let's hear a clip from the film Hateful Eight.
Okay, everybody, hear this. I'm taking this woman to hang. Reward's $10,000. That money's mine, boys.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Hold on! You think I'm in cahoots with that fella or her?
That's my problem, boy. I don't know.
One of them fellas will kill everybody in here.
Now we're talking!
A clip from Quentin Tarantino's latest offering, Hateful Eight. Karen, would you describe this as a Western, a thriller?
It's been described as a Western mystery, which I think is quite interesting. You say it's like as if Poirot ended up in a spittoon, which is fine. You know, that clip that you just played sounds so exciting, but I found it really to be, in a way, now Tarantino, he loves to do homages to all the films that he loved throughout his life. And this is no different. But there's a lot of anachronism. There's a lot of violence. It's very violent. And it's gruesome violence. Jennifer Jason Leigh does a wonderful job with, I think, just a ridiculous character. A lot of people going, oh, it was wonderful with her black tear. And also Morricone did the score for it. Mm-hmm. And he tactfully said, it's unlike any Western I've ever seen.
It's interesting because it's quite a coup to get Morricone. I mean, known for some of the great period epic Westerns.
But he did actually reuse some unused stuff that he'd written for a John Carpenter film. So it's not exactly fresh. I got the impression that Morricone, because he, you know, likes to work, just kind of said, here, let's just fix this on. It's interesting because it's structured like an old-fashioned film, let's say like Lawrence of Arabia, where you have an intermission, and there's also music and things. So it's an event movie. Now, there have been problems seeing this. I saw it digitally, I have to say, but most people want to see it in the Ultra Panavision 70, and cinemas are having a terrible time, number one, fitting this retro
camera.
Well,
how many films are shot in that format?
Like none. I mean, I can't remember the last one, actually. It's many years ago. And also finding people to run it. And in fact, it's been, I think it caught fire once. So there are problems with this. And in fact, people that expect it to be Ultra Panavision 70 end up watching it in digital. So my advice to you would be, if you like Tarantino, you're going to have to see this. I don't think it's vintage. He has also been talking that this is possibly his penultimate film.
The Hateful Eight premiered in LA just before Christmas and is now rolling out worldwide. We're going to end today's show with A War, a new Danish film by Tobias Lindholm, one of the writers behind the hugely successful TV series Borgen. A War sees a commander in Afghanistan grappling with a tough decision in order to save his men in combat while his family wait for him at home. Before we talk about the film in more detail, let's hear a clip from A War.
Hvis vi lige prøver at holde fokus her, så er det mig, der har mistet en af mine 21-årige drenge, som har ligget foran mig for blødt i dag. Det giver ikke nogen mening.
Selvom I går patruljer ude i landsbyen om dagen, så om natten, så kommer Taliban. Nu vil de have, at han bliver kriger, ellers slår de hans familie ihjel.
A clip from the new film from Danish director Tobias Lindholm there, A War. Now, normally when we think of war films, we think of, you know, The Hurt Locker, American films at war. This is must have a totally different perspective and feel.
It does, very much so. I sat down and watched it, and I was, you know, saw them walking along with their uniforms, and I expected Yankee accents, of course, and it's not. But it does have a very different feel, because Lindholm has an ability to be very logical but very interesting and draw us in through this very defined path of the story. It's in two parts. We have the war on one side and, of course, the family life on the other. When you really see that the men don't want to be at war. They want to be home looking after the problems that are there. But they have to do what they have to do. And what happens here is that there are a lot of moral problems with what happens. I don't want to give too much away. But also, the people that try to help the soldiers end up being punished for it. And that, too, is quite shocking. And the end of the film is set in a court where he is tried for atrocities, basically.
It is a film, I gather, in two parts, one in the war zone, one back at home. In terms of the war zone filming, does it have that sort of Danish dogma feel to it? Is it a more vérité sort of style of filming?
No, I wouldn't say so. I mean, the war parts of the film were shot in Turkey, so they look very, very realistic. No, it's you get a lot of long shots. You don't get a sense of any sort of shaky cam going on. Mm-hmm. It's pretty much set up, and you can follow it very easily. But I think what's interesting is the way that they care about each other and the fact that all of the characters are really quite rounded. There's no sort of cannon fodder character along there. We care about all of them. And their morality and their adherence to the code, I think, is very interesting. Of course, that is what it gets questioned at the end.
Is there a sort of Danish interpretation? Once again, you know, not stereotype, but American films can perhaps be not judgmental, but over-sentimentalize, whether it's with the music, you know, that can infer what we're meant to be thinking or feeling. Is there a point of view to this?
That's a very good point, Gillian. A really good point. No, actually. Well, there is a point of view, but we never feel pulled one way or the other. We are left to decide. And that means it's a very adult and a very ethical film, I think.
It had tremendous reviews when it came out. What about award season? How is it playing out at festivals and awards?
It's doing very well. It had three noms at festivals last year, which is very, very good. And this year it was submitted as the foreign film from Denmark. And it is, okay, let me be quite precise. It was on the long list is every single country's nominee. Presentation nomination, and it is now on the short list for the actual nominations to win an Oscar. So, yeah, it's a short list of nine, and that's one of them.
boding well. We'll look out for it. Award premiered at the Venice Film Festival last year and is out in the UK and Ireland today. Look out for it in the US of A in April. And that brings us to the end of this week's show. A thanks, as always, to my guest, Karen Krzanovich. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. My producer was Holly Fisher. We'll be back on Monday to take a look at the week in art. But for now, goodbye and thanks for listening.